we'd left the palace. We were propping each other up. The tunnel started in the cellar, behind two huge boxes that were labeled as being flour, but that sounded a lot like guns when I disturbed one of them as we pushed by. Shahzad struck an oil lamp to life and led the way. I wasn't sure how far we walked. It was more than twice the length of Dust Walk, though. I counted my paces for that long before giving up. And then a pinprick of light appeared ahead of us. Another door, I realized. I hesitated. Dozens of memories of coming home to the Dev's peace flooded in, of standing outside the door in the cliff face and waiting for it to let me leave the desert dust and come home. That was gone now. That home wouldn't be waiting for me on the other side of this door. It wouldn't spill open onto an oasis that had been built out of magic and turned into the rebellion's refuge. The people who had died in our escape wouldn't be on the other side waiting for me. I didn't know what to expect, but I wanted to come home all the same. I stepped through. It was quieter than the old camp. That was the first thing I noticed, and I realized why in an instant. The huge walls that stretched up around the property might block everything from sight except the sky, but we were still in the middle of a city. There were ears all around. But the place was still blazing with light and with movement. It wasn't the desert, but the memory of the desert was still there. Tents were scattered among the campfires, and a makeshift armory had been set up against one of the walls. Lanterns and laundry crisscrossed patterns over the sky. It almost looked like hope. Amani! Delilah was the first person to see me. She was sprinting across the garden and flung her arms around me, pulling me from Jin's grip. You're alive! They got you out! What happened to your hair? I like it, though. You look older. I wanted to come and help, too, but no one would let me. I realized, as she pushed her hair behind her ears, that it looked darker, and not just by some trick of the light or because of an illusion she was casting. It had been dyed black with henna, hiding the telltale Demji purple, a safety measure in the big city. Ahmed was taking no risks with his little sister. "We've been over this," Shahzad said. "We need to keep one of you two in the camp at all times, just in case we need to hide it." She gestured between Delilah and Hala, who smiled tightly. "And somehow, I'm always the expendable one."
"Nice to see you too, little sister," Jin joked as she pulled away from me.
With a foolish grin, Delilah flung herself at Jin. I was sure the greeting I was getting was a pale shadow in comparison to what Jin had had when he finally returned. Navid was on us, grabbing Amin, still in the bloody servant's garb, in a tight embrace. All those days with Amin roaming the palace and no news couldn't have been easy on Navid. But Amin had been right. The beard didn't suit him. And then I was being passed from hand to hand, friends and rebels I barely knew alike, patting me on the back, hugging me, congratulating me on staying alive, on escaping. Thanking me for my sacrifice when I'd stayed so long in the harem. The twins turned into two cats and twined themselves around my legs, almost tripping me with every step I took. I felt like a piece of myself was being returned to me with every person, pulling me out of the harem. Pulling away the grief over Shira, the anger over my aunt, everything that had happened in the last few months as I slipped from one hand to another. And then, like the parting of a curtain, I was standing face to face with Ahmed. I was sure that every moment of doubt I'd had in the past months, all of it, was scrawled across my traitor eyes. Every time I'd seen his father decide more quickly, every time I'd feared that the Sultan was right and Ahmed wasn't ready. Every time I'd been stupid enough to listen to a murderer and a tyrant.
Ahmed. Amani. He grabbed me roughly by the shoulder, jolting me forward into a hug. I collapsed gratefully. Ahmed was a lot easier to believe in when he was flesh and blood in front of me. Welcome home.
Chapter 40. The ripples of the night before hit us one by one. The events of Aurangzeb were twisted by the palace before being spread among the people of Isman. The Sultan announced Miraji's independence from foreign rule. Any country that threatened our borders would burn for it. The announcement went on to say that in the fighting of the night, Prince Kadir had been killed. He had died bravely in combat, killed by his own brothers, the rebel prince and Prince Rahim, who had turned on his family unexpectedly, along with Lord Bilal, who had escaped. Prince Rahim had been apprehended trying to flee like a coward. He would be cursed forever for killing his own blood. The Sultan was grieving his son. There was no news about an execution for Rahim. After what had happened at Shira's execution, I could see why the Sultan might not want to risk another public beheading. There were going to be new Sultan trials to choose a new heir to Miraji. The Sultan had told me the people never loved the throne so much as when princes were killing each other for it. He'd murdered his own son, and now he was using his death to win the people back over from the rebellion to the throne. But we could use it too. We would remind the city that the Sultan trials had already chosen an heir, Prince Ahmed. In light of the recent events, the palace announced there would be a new curfew. The Sultan's army of Abdals would patrol the streets. They could not be reasoned with or argued against. Anyone found on the streets between sundown and sunrise would be executed. It was for safety, the palace said. After all, only dark intentions belong to the dark hours of the night. They didn't say it was to hobble the rebellion, but we all heard the meaning behind the words. And we were hobbled. It was strange hearing it from the outside after being on the inside for so long. We were operating blind again, just when we couldn't afford to. It was agreed that Emin would go back to the palace to be our eyes. Isn't there another way? I knuckled my eyes tiredly as I went over it with the others. We were in Shahzad's father's office. It had been set up as a war room of sorts. Not that much had needed to change for that. There was something comforting about it, even though we could scarcely have been further from Ahmed's pavilion back in the rebel camp. The walls were pinned with maps and notes. The map of Isman I'd stolen from the Sultan's desk the night we'd eaten together was right in the middle. I recognized a lot of the rest as information I'd passed on from inside the palace. Some of it Rahim had given me. I'd escaped, but he was still inside, and we needed to know what was happening to him. So I felt a stab of guilt as I voiced my objection. I'm not so sure it's smart to put another Demji in the Sultan's hands. Rahim had been my ally, but no one knew better than I did the risks of Amin getting found out. Navid looked hopeful at my objection. He was sitting in a huge armchair in the corner, arms circled around Emin. She was wearing a petite feminine shape, small enough that she fit into her husband's arms like she was a missing piece who'd belonged there all along. Her legs were tucked under her as she leaned against his chest comfortably, eyes closed. She was exhausted but awake. The night before had taken its toll on everyone. Hala was truly asleep in a corner. Jin was sitting on Shahzad's father's desk, shirt flung over his back, as Shahzad inspected the wound on his side. You need to get this seen to properly, Shahzad said to Jin. Somewhere you won't bleed all over my father's study. Go find Hajara. We'd lost our holy father in the escape from the Devs Valley. Until we had someone new, Hajara was a decent seamstress.
If you don't need me, Jin said, easing himself to his feet.
We've done fine without you so far, brother, Ahmed commented.
It was a low blow.
Shahzad and I shared a look. This new tension that hung between Ahmed and Jin wasn't good for anyone. But Jin didn't say anything as he brushed past me on his way to the door, fingers dancing across the back of my hand like he wanted to take it.
Don't volunteer for anything stupid while I'm gone.
We don't have that many other choices that I can see, Emin said as the door closed behind Jin. Unless someone else would like to reveal now that they've been sitting on a secret shape-shifting skill so I can take a break. Anyone? No? I didn't think so.
I'd offer, but I don't think foreigners are all that welcome in the palace at the moment, Sam offered.
He was watching Shahzad.
And I don't make a beautiful enough woman to pass in the harem very long. Amani can vouch for that.
It's true, I admitted. He doesn't have the cleavage to pull off a culotte.
Shahzad snorted.
Someone has to go, Emin said, uncurling herself from her husband's grip, shifting easily from wife to rebel. If I get caught, I can always take poison before he gets his claws into me like he did Amani.
I wasn't entirely sure she was joking.
We stole a few hours of sleep after daybreak, when we were sure the palace was done feeding lies to the people and the rush of the night before had worn off. We were in Shahzad's home, which meant she had her own rooms inside the house. That was the moment it hit me in earnest that our old home was gone. Our tent was gone. The small space that we had shared for half a year and that had become as familiar as my bed and dust walk had ever been. I figured I could have found my own tent, if I'd wanted to, start getting settled into this new camp. Instead, I found Jin. He was dozing in the shade of an orange tree with huge, sprawling branches. His shirt was riding up, and I could see the place Hajara had patched him up. He startled awake as I stretched out next to him, stilling as he realized it was me. I knew he was watching me. In the scarce few months we'd had between Fahali and the bullet that caught me in the side, we'd stolen plenty of moments together in the desert, but never slept side by side. He shifted slightly so he was on his side facing me as I settled down, pillowing my head with my arm. The grass was still cool from the night. I might be sleeping on the ground again, but I had the feeling I would rest easier here than I had on 100 cushions in the harem.
I haven't gotten around to setting up a new tent yet.
His arm found the small of my back.
Seeing as I only just got back from chasing down this girl I know.
Next time, you should try to keep better track of her, I said as I closed my eyes, leaning my head into him.
I'm counting on it.
He settled me against him. That was the last thing I heard before I dozed off. Shahzad woke us both sometime in the afternoon. Her hair was wet from a bath and twisted up into a knot at the back of her head. I wondered if she'd had any real rest since Aurangzeb. Layla had finally come too, she told us. Shahzad had made good on her promise of chains. Thamid and Layla had been confined to two of the many empty rooms in the house, chained and locked until we could count on them not making a run for it. I'd tried to go see Thamid in the room adjoining Layla's, but he'd pretended to be sleeping, which was a clear enough message for me. Layla looked like a trapped animal, her knees pulled up to her chin, eyes darting between me, Jin, Ahmed, and Shahzad, like she was trying to watch us all at once. No, not a trapped animal. She was looking at us like we might be the animals, about to tear her apart at any second. I remembered the day I met her in the menagerie, when she'd been building a small mechanical elephant, and I'd been the one being circled by Kadir's wives. But this was different. At least I figured it was. So, Ahmed said conversationally, sitting down at the end of the bed. She drew her legs in a bit further. You built an army of machine and magic for my father.
I didn't.
Layla had always sounded young, but her small voice was almost gone now.
Please don't hurt me. I didn't have a choice in helping him.
Nobody is going to hurt you, Ahmed said gently, at the same time that Shahzad made a disbelieving noise at the back of her throat. Everyone has a choice, Shahzad said when Layla looked at her with wide, startled eyes. I kicked her ankle. Hard. The last thing we needed was to scare Layla too badly to talk. She looked at me sharply.
My choice was to help my father or watch my brother die.
Layla buried her face in her chained-up hands miserably.
What would you have done?
And then she started to cry, out of nowhere, big, ugly sobs that shook her whole body violently.
Your father threatened Rahim?
I asked, instead of letting Shahzad answer that question.
He told you he would hurt him if you didn't help him?
Rahim had been worried about Layla being in danger in the harem, but it looked like he was the one being threatened.
Rahim has no idea. He never knew what happened to our mother.
Layla wiped at her running nose with her sleeve as best she could with tied hands.
All those years back, she told my father she could make him a machine that could power all of Miraji, that could change the world.
Her mother had been the daughter of a Gamenix engineer, the country that melded magic and machines.
And she did it. Except that it needed to take its energy from somewhere. It took it from her.
Layla wiped angrily at the tears welling in her eyes, just like it did for all the other people who came after her.
Like Saida, I realized. And Ayet.
And Muna and Uzma. Girls who had disappeared out of the harem without a trace. A place where girls disappeared all the time without causing any ripples.
They were tests. You can take...
Layla squeezed her eyes shut.
The holy books say that mortals are made with a spark of genie fire. The machine takes that spark and can give life to something else. Not true life, but what they have. My father figured if he could do that with a mortal life, what could be done with an immortal one?
Layla looked pained. You can power an army that doesn't fall when faced with bullets, Shahzad filled in, understanding what it was we'd all seen the night before. The gravity of what we were facing moved between the four of us. That doesn't tire or eat, that can stand against Miraji's enemies. Including us, I said grimly.
How do they work?
Layla shrugged, looking miserable.
The same way all magic does. Words, words, words.
So how do we stop them? Shahzad interrupted before Layla could tumble down some rabbit hole of self-pity.
It's almost impossible.
Layla shook her head, tears squeezing out of her eyes.
You'd have to destroy the power source and...
The machine, Jin said. He took a step forward and Layla flinched away from him. I put a hand on his arm, stopping him. He might technically share the same blood as Layla, but he was a dangerous-looking, tattooed stranger to her, not a brother. How do we do that? Shahzad asked. We've got enough gunpowder to blow the whole thing if we can...
No, Layla said hurriedly, her eyes wide and panicked. You destroy the whole city. Like in the story of Akeem and his wife, genie fire out of control. The genie has to be released, not unleashed. The energy released with the right words, same as he was captured with.
Then Layla looked straight at me.
Amani bound him. She's the only one who can unbind him.
And just like that, everyone was looking at me. If I'd known I was doomed to get this much attention, I might have brushed my hair.
Chapter 41.
I'm not going to lie to you all.
Ahmed looked around the kitchen, crowded with rebels.
This is going to be a challenge.
It was a good thing for morale that Ahmed wasn't a Demji. If he couldn't lie, I was pretty sure he would have struggled to use the word challenge instead of, say, disaster. We were 24 or so packed to the rafters around Shahzad's kitchen, leaning against the colorful tiles that swirled around the walls like steam off a fine dish, our heads bumping pans that hung from the ceiling. Shahzad stood next to Ahmed at his right hand, like she always did. Jin was leaning on the fireplace. If you didn't know he was injured, you might not even guess he was using it for support. Sam had retreated to the back, letting his hand pass in and out of the wall absent-mindedly. I cradled the cup of strong coffee in my hands. I'd slept a few more restless hours, but not enough. There were faces that should have been here that weren't. People who had died in the escape from the valley. There were new faces I didn't know. Still, even in the strange setting, it felt just like it used to in Ahmed's pavilion in the camp. We'd lost that home, but we were still fighting to make a new one. The curtains in the kitchen were red, drawn against peeping eyes on the street. They turned the room bloody as the dawn. A new dawn, a new desert.
We're outnumbered, Ahmed said. Outmaneuvered and outgunned.
Jin caught my eye across the room, an eyebrow going up as if to say, not much of an inspirational speech. I snorted. And out Demji, judging by those things at Aurangzeb, someone muttered from the back. A ripple of assent went through the room. The rumors of the Abdals and their strange powers had spread frighteningly fast. Shahzad said there were already signs of it snuffing what sparks of dissent we'd been able to ignite in the streets.
Yes, thank you, Yasir, and that's where we start.
Shahzad took control easily as she stepped up to the table. Ahmed ceded the room to her. I had an image of Shahzad next to Ahmed on the throne. As his sultana as well as his general, her head dipped over some problem with a golden crown slipping down her brow. It would suit her.
We have three problems of pressing urgency right now. And thanks to our real blue-eyed bandit, now returned to us, no offense,
she tossed over her shoulder at Sam,
we might have solutions for them. Even if she did create one of those problems in the first place, Hala muttered.
I ignored her. As I stepped forward, eyes followed me. I might not have been back long, but I'd already noticed the change. I wasn't just the blue-eyed bandit anymore. I was the girl who had made it out of the palace alive, who had stood toe-to-toe with the Sultan and escaped. The first problem is that we need an army, a true army, that can go up against the Sultans. If we can forge an alliance with Lord Bilal, then we have a fighting force. We've arranged a meeting with Lord Bilal a few hours from now, before dark. By the end of it, here's hoping we'll have an army.
Assuming he hasn't already fled the city,
Hala added. Did you get more pessimistic since I left? I asked. Or did I just forget what a pain in the ass you are?
Well, you know what they say about absence making the heart grow fonder.
Hala shot a fake smile my way.
Isn't optimism what got you captured in the first place?
Please keep in mind how many ways I know to kill you both if you don't shut up.
Jazad interrupted before we could descend into an all-out brawl.
A laugh went around the room, lightening the weight of the mood.
Our second problem,
Ahmed said, trying to get the room back on track,
is that even if we do get an army, we can only stand against another army of flesh and blood, not one made out of mechanical parts and magic, which is why we need to get Amani to that machine.
And right now, it'll be too well defended. There's no way we can get anywhere near it, Jazad said.
Not unless we draw the Sultan and his whole army away from guarding it, which, as it turns out, wars are very useful tools for.
Everyone stared at Jazad.
Are you suggesting we start a war just to get Amani into the palace?
Someone said from the back of the room.
No, Jazad said. We need to start a war anyway. I'm suggesting we use the war to make our odds of winning a little better by giving Amani the opportunity to sneak into the palace.
Even if I could get inside, I wouldn't be able to deactivate the machine without the right words to free the gene in the first language. Words not even Tamid knew.
Bringing us to our final problem, Ahmed pressed on, which is that Amani is currently incapacitated.
That settled the room soon enough. I self-consciously rubbed the spot on my arm where I could feel one of the pieces of iron sewed into my flesh. It was like prodding a loose tooth. An instinct, a tick, feeling that little shoot of pain when I pressed it in, reminding myself this wasn't truly part of me. Reminding me I was useless with my body riddled with iron scars.
Where are we on finding a holy man we can trust?
Jazad asked, leaning her knuckles on the table.
Someone to cut the iron out of Amani.
I knew what the words cost her. In the months since Bahi had died, I didn't know if I'd truly heard Jazad talk so plainly about holy fathers, not even when I'd been shot through the stomach. But then again, I had been unconscious for most of that.
More or less exactly where we were the last three times you asked me that, said Sam.
He was on edge.
Holy men are largely in the pockets of your Sultan. They'd all sell you out in a heartbeat sooner than they'd help you.
And Tamid couldn't be trusted not to stick a blade in me either, given how he felt about the rebellion. Can't we take a chance? I rubbed my finger along my forearm, worrying at the piece of metal below there. I wanted to claw it out of my skin myself.
No, Jin said without hesitation, speaking for the first time. Everyone's head swiveled towards him.
Jin didn't tend to speak up at our war meetings unless he had something he needed to say, which meant folk tended to listen. Only there was an uneasiness among the rebels now. He hadn't disappeared on just me. He'd abandoned the whole rebellion.
We're not taking chances with you.
So either we find someone, I concluded, or I've got to walk into the palace more or less defenseless.
Welcome back to being human, Jazad said.
I'll get you some guns.
Sam. I caught him as the kitchen emptied. He was peeling an orange stolen out of one of the baskets hanging from the ceiling. I need your help. I stopped speaking as Shahzad brushed past me, calling out to someone quickly about the weapons supply. That earned me a raised eyebrow from Sam.
Something your general can't help you with?
I lowered my voice as I pulled him into an out-of-the-way corner. I think I know somebody who might be able to help get the iron out of my skin. Not a holy man. A woman. My aunt.
Sam paused, orange wedge halfway into his mouth.
The woman who drugged you and kidnapped you and sold you to the harem? Yes, she seems very trustworthy.
Please, Sam, I need help. You walked in and out of the harem at will for months. You have no idea what it's like to be in there and feel powerless to leave or defend yourself.
I tugged at my shirt, showing the scar on my hip, the same one I'd shown him the first time we met. This happened, even when I had my power. If I have to, I'll walk into the palace again without it, but I'm twice as likely to get killed doing that, and you know it. But I'd take just about any risk not to. Now, will you help me?
Sam considered, peeling off another piece of the orange.
How much?
How much what?
How much are you going to pay me to find your oh-so-very-trustworthy aunt?
My shoulders sagged. Really? After all this, you want to keep pretending you're doing it for the money?
Why else would I be doing it?
He asked.
I'm a bandit, remember?
Because you want to be something more than that, I said finally. It had been a gamble, a guess, but the way it fell off my tongue so easily, I was sure I was right. I'd watched Sam walk through walls with injuries for this rebellion, walk into Aurangzeb as a traitor to his own people for this rebellion. He wasn't doing this for money anymore. That's why you're still here.
That'd be an awfully stupid reason.
Sam scratched his eyebrow. I stayed silent.
I'll see what I can do.
Chapter 42. As it turned out, the hidden house wasn't all that hidden. It was a bathhouse at the intersection of two twisting streets lined with colorful awnings in the middle of Isman. To me, they looked exactly like every other street we'd passed through on the way there. The city was an immense maze, and if it wasn't for Ahmed gently nudging me around twists and turns, I'd have gotten lost sooner than I'd ever been in the desert. As we got closer, steam heavy with the smells of flowers and spices curled out of lattice windows, sliding its fingers into my hair, taunting me with memories of the harem. Ahmed gave me a small nudge, indicating I should look up. As I did, the name finally made sense. All the buildings in this corner of Isman seemed to stand an even 3 stories tall. The hidden house stretched up 2 stories higher than any of the others around it, and the roof was shielded by canopies of vines and desert flowers that tumbled down the walls, hiding it from prying eyes. Shahzad had picked this place for the meeting with Lord Bilal, except she'd told him to meet her elsewhere first, with no guards and no weapons. It was up to Shahzad to meet him there and bring him here. We were taking our precautions. We were asking him to put an awful lot of faith in us. Jin had gone first, out in the open, to see if he drew any attack and to sweep the place for traps. Ahmed and I followed, looking like an ordinary couple walking the streets of Isman, instead of a prince and a bodyguard with a gun secreted in the folds of her khalat. but we made it as far as the house without incident. Ahmed pushed open the door and let himself in. At a desk, a girl's head darted up. Well, if it isn't our rebel prince. She flicked a book shut and shot me a look. You can take your finger off that trigger. You're safe here. I hadn't even realized I'd been gripping my gun. I eased my finger off, but I didn't reholster it. Your brother is on the roof, the girl said to Ahmed. What is this place? I asked as we started up the stairs.
It's a safe haven.
Ahmed stepped aside, letting me go first. I wasn't sure if he was being polite or if that was what I was supposed to do as his guard.
Not ours. Sara's.
He tilted his head backwards at the girl at the desk.
She was married at 16, widowed at 17. Nobody but Sara knows what her husband died of, since no one could prove that it was poison. But he left her with broken bones and a great deal of money.
My mind darted to Ayet without meaning to. If she'd wound up here instead of in the palace, she might not have been my enemy. She might have been one of us. She might still be all right. Or she might have taken a bullet for the rebellion and died outright.
She took the money and made this. It's a place for women who might not want to be with their husbands, for whatever reason. A place that keeps women safe from them. Saida came from here, and we found Hala here, too.
Hala's married? I almost tripped on the step.
Who do you think took her fingers?
Ahmed steadied me.
You all right?
Fine. I waved him off. So how come it looks gaudier than a whorehouse at Shehabian? I asked. Ahmed laughed, catching me off guard. Ahmed had a good laugh. I'd forgotten that. It had been a damn long time since I'd heard it.
Sara's theory is that if folk think they know what you're up to, they don't dig much deeper and risk finding the truth. And everybody thinks they know what we're up to, with a house full of women, with men coming in and out every day, and the occasional child appearing.
Sara. Now I remembered why that name rang a bell. Standing on a mountain in a desert, the day before Bahi died, Shahzad teasing him about a child with a woman named Sara.
She likes to say she just added some pillows.
We sent Fadi here.
He'll be safe.
We climbed four flights of stairs until we reached the roof. Jin was there, waiting, shadowed under a canopy of greenery. His shoulders eased visibly when he saw us.
No trouble on the way?
We're fine, I said. No trouble here? He shook his head. We lapsed into tense silence as we waited for Shahzad. It was meant to be a half hour before she arrived. It was closer to a full hour, and panic had my guts wrapped in a knot, wondering what had happened to her when she emerged at the top of the stairs with Bilal, hooded and blindfolded. We told him to meet Shahzad unarmed and alone. We'd set almost all of the terms of our meeting, and we'd set them high, expecting a negotiation. But Shahzad said he hadn't even flinched. He'd agreed to come to us, defenseless. That was the sort of thing that made you suspect a trap. Shahzad kept scanning the skies around us warily as she pulled the hood from his head and uncovered his eyes.
Don't worry, Bilal said lazily. I don't have anything up my sleeves. You can ask any one of your demji if you don't believe me.
Everyone looked at me. So he knew what I was. He's telling the truth, I said. I could tell what Shahzad was thinking. There was something wrong with a man who had so little regard for his own life.
Good.
Bilal stuck his hands in his pockets. He was wearing an ugly purple and gold kurta that was too loose on him and billowed around his arms. He fit right in with the gaudiness of the hidden house.
So you're the famous rebel prince.
Bilal looked Ahmed over.
I thought you'd be taller.
You shouldn't believe everything you hear, Ahmed said.
I hear you might actually be able to topple your father, Bilal offered, with some help from my army.
That, Ahmed said, you should believe.
Good,
Bilal said.
I want to end this parade of invaders. It's tiresome. If my army can topple your father, it is yours to command. I never had much interest in commanding anyway. That was always Rahim's strength. He was like a second son to my father. But I will want something in return.
When I am sultan, Ahmed was prepared, I will declare Ilyaz independent. You can be the ruler of your own kingdom, as long as you are prepared to swear allegiance to the throne of Miraji.
Oh, I don't care about that.
Bilal shook his head.
That was just a pretext to feed your pretty general something big enough to get me face to face with you. If I told her what I was truly after outright, I had the feeling she'd turn me down on the spot on your behalf. Women, they can be so unreasonable.
And what is it that you're after?
Ahmed asked. He was careful with his wording. He didn't say, name it, even though we all knew how desperate we were.
You can keep your kingdom, every last piece of it,
Bilal said.
In exchange for my army, all I want is one of your demji as a wife.
The silence that filled the moment that followed was tangible. It was the silence of shock from all of us on the roof. It was the silence in which Ahmed didn't immediately refuse him.
The demji are not mine to offer, Ahmed said finally, picking his words carefully. Ilyaz, on the other hand, I have no interest in being the king of my own country.
Bilal waved a languid hand.
An independent Ilyaz was my father's dream. He was an ambitious man, a great man. I'm a dying man. The holy men say it's in my blood. I have a handful of years left to live, if I'm lucky.
I saw it now, in the loose-fitting clothing, the pallor of his skin, the way he held himself like he was always tired. It wasn't arrogance, it was illness.
Even if you did win the war and grant me my own kingdom, I would rule over it for how long? 1 year? 2?
So where do we come in?
I couldn't keep my mouth shut any longer. Not when he was negotiating for one of us.
If you just want a wife to give you a son before you die, I'm sure you can find someone who's not a demji.
Bilal smiled wanly. Everyone has this notion that the demji have powers to heal. That is why on the black market you can buy scraps of hair or strange skin or floating blue eyeballs to heal you.
His eyes traveled across us.
But that is a watered-down story. Some will say that the true healing power lies in taking a demji's life.
I remembered Mahdi holding his knife to Delilah's throat, trying to drag her to Saida to save her life, saying Delilah would die so she could live.
It's a mistranslation from old Mirajin, you see.
Bilal looked at us.
The true phrase is not whoever takes a demji life, but whoever owns a demji life. Whoever is given a demji's life. Surely you know the story of Hawa and Atala.
Hawa and Atala had made oaths to each other. The stories said that theirs was a love so great that it shielded Atala in battle. But if she was a Demji? Wedding vows. It hit me like a punch in the gut. I give myself to you. All that I am, I give to you. And all that I have is yours. My life is yours to share until the day we die. They were nothing but ritual for most. But in the mouth of a Demji, they were truth-telling. That was how the legend had been born. Hawa had kept Atala alive with her words. So long as she watched him on the walls, her life tied to his, he lived. When she fell, he fell too. He didn't die from grief. He died from a Demji truth. Dead silence had fallen around us as that understanding sank in. Give me one of your Demji, Bilal said, and his eyes scraped across me.
She will be treated well. I will not harm her, though I will expect her to perform all her wifely duties. I saw Jin's hand tighten. I will ask only one son of her, and in return I will honor her by taking no other wife. I want to live to see my hair turn gray and meet my grandchildren, and I will give you an army and a country. One girl in exchange for a throne.
He let the weight of his words settle over us.
I see you need to consider this. I ride for Ilyaz in the morning. If you want an army, come find me there with a wife. If you don't...
He shrugged.
I will watch you and your rebels burn under your father's new weapons from my fortress, and die in my own bed long before the war is over and the Sultan comes for me. And if you hate me for it, we can settle that after death.
Chapter 43. I missed the desert nights like an ache. Shira had been right. You couldn't see the stars from Isman. The city was too flooded with noise and light, too bright to make out the constellations of the dead. But I knew it wasn't really the stars I missed. Everything had changed. We weren't an upstart rebellion in the desert anymore. I missed the simplicity of being sure that what we were doing was right, that it was worth it. We were starting a war, and a war demanded sacrifice. I could feel the uneasy restlessness in the camp.
There's an easy way out of this, you know.
When Jin talked, with my head leaning against his chest, I felt it in my bones before I truly heard him. It was long past dark, and we were both already half asleep. It had been a long, quiet walk back after Bilal's proposal. Even Shahzad hadn't had anything to say. Ahmed and Jin had fallen into step ahead of me, deep in angry conversation. They were working it out at the same time as everyone else was. Hala and Emin were both already married, which left me and Delilah. The two of us were the only ones who were able to offer ourselves up to Bilal in sacrifice if we wanted that army, if we wanted to make this a real fight, not a slow massacre. I knew what Jin meant. If he and I got married, I was off the table too. I know, I said. I didn't say anything else. I didn't say that I knew Jin would never forgive himself if he saved me over Delilah. That if Ahmed tried to force my hand, he wasn't the kind of ruler I'd want leading an army anyway. I didn't say that I'd walked across the entire desert to not wind up having marriage chosen for me, even if it was to Jin. But my silence spoke for me. He wrapped his arms around me and pulled me against his chest. He was warm and solid. I tucked my head low, my mouth resting against his heartbeat over the sun tattoo. He fell asleep eventually. I didn't. After a few restless hours, I pulled myself out of his arms. We were mostly sleeping without tents in the warm summer air. I picked my way through the bodies that were strewn across the grass, like dead on a battlefield. The house was quiet as I made my way back to the kitchen. It looked a lot bigger without half of the rebellion stuffed into it. I started rifling through the tins on Shazad's shelf, looking for coffee. The door to the kitchen crashed open, making me jump so violently I knocked a glass bottle to the ground with an ear-splitting shatter. An unfamiliar man staggered into the kitchen. I was about to go on the attack when he got close enough to the fire that I saw his yellow eyes. "Emin?" I relaxed, even as he collapsed into a chair by the fire, breathing hard. "Are you all right?" "I had to run all the way here," he panted. He was wearing a young man's face, and his beardless cheeks looked flushed. "The city is swarming with those Abdal things. One nearly saw me a few streets back, but I couldn't get out of the palace all day, and I had to tell someone. Rahim." That name got my attention. "Is he all right?" "No," Emin deadpanned. "He's a prisoner. He's obviously not all right. But he's not dead either. And judging by all the talk in the kitchens, he's not going to be. Rahim is respected by the Sultan's army. Executing him would be bad for morale, they're saying, and bad for the Sultan among the people. So he's being sent away, transported to some work camp where he can die quietly." That sounded like good news. The first in a long while, but I didn't get my hopes up yet. "When are they moving him?" Emin treated me to another eye roll. "Do you think I ran through Abdal-infested streets for my health? Tomorrow night." I found Ahmed in the general's study. There was one flickering lamp that leaked its light under the bottom of the door. It made me think of the story of the jealous genie who flickered a tempting light in the night, luring children out of their parents' homes, making them chase the fire far enough into the night that he could snatch them up and keep them as pets. I could hear voices from halfway down the hallway. "Delilah." Ahmed sounded tired. "You can't."
"Yes, I can."
Delilah raised her voice. I paused, just shy of the threshold.
"You're the one who can't, Ahmed. There wouldn't even be a war if it wasn't for me. This whole thing started because I was born. That's why Lien had to run. That's why you two had to start working when you were younger than I am now to feed us. I'm the reason you and Jin grew up in Sicha. And that's why this whole revolution started in the first place. That's why Bahi is dead, and Mahdi and Saida and everyone else. I started this war, and you will not even let me fight it. So I'm going to help finish it." I stepped back just as Delilah stormed out of the study, the door hitting the wall loudly enough to wake half the house. She didn't even see me as she pushed her way down the hallway. I waited until she was out of sight before I stepped into the light on the threshold. Ahmed's head shot up as my shadow crossed into the study. It had been resting on his palms, his elbows propped on the desk. His gaze struggled to focus on me. There was an empty bottle next to him. I wondered how full it had been when he started. "Amani." He stretched up, and the candlelight traveled across his face, looking one side into light, then the other, so he looked like two people. I'd never seen Ahmed drunk before, I realized.
If you're here to do the selfless thing and offer yourself up to Lord Bilal for an army, I'm afraid my sister just beat you to it.
Doing the selfless thing doesn't sound a whole lot like me. I sank down into the chair across from him without being invited.
Jin would never forgive me if I were to let you go.
Ahmed shook his head.
If I let Delilah go, he won't either. But I'll probably never forgive myself, so at least we'll both hate me equally then.
Let you go, he said. Not make you go. Ahmed was my ruler. He could order me to do the selfless thing, to surrender myself instead of his sister. But that hadn't even crossed his mind, because he wasn't his father. There had been moments in the palace when that had frightened me. That he might not be strong enough, knowledgeable enough, that he might be too idealistic. But that was what Meraji needed. Meraji needed a ruler like Ahmed. I was just afraid that a ruler like Ahmed could never seize the country from a ruler like the Sultan.
It should be easy, shouldn't it? One person for an entire country. My sister or an army.
No, I said. I thought of the ease with which the Sultan had ordered an execution. I don't think ruling is ever supposed to be easy. But what if there was another way?
To win the rebellion without an army?
He cast me a wan smile.
With more riots and lost lives, more cities falling out of my hands like Saramotai, with a death count rising as my father creates machines to make slaughter easy?
No. What if there was another way to gain control over the army from Ilyaz? Ahmed looked up at me, a flicker of hope on his face. Rahim, I said. He was commander of Ilyaz's army before Bilal was ever the emir. They know him. They respect him. I thought of how easily his soldiers had fallen into line when Rahim had ordered them against Kadir the day the Galen ambassador almost strangled me. I think they would follow him, with or without Bilal's consent.
Are you suggesting we send Emin?
No. I shook my head. Emin might be able to take his shape, but wouldn't be able to take Rahim's place.
Emin's done it before, Ahmed said. Impersonated someone for us.
Not for so long. You don't think that if Emin walked into camp with your face and started giving us orders, everyone would notice it wasn't you quicker than anything? We need the real Rahim. No more tricks, just a good old-fashioned rescue. Ahmed leaned back in his chair.
Is that the only reason you want to save him?
I don't like leaving people behind. Especially not people whom I owed my life to.
Amani, with the whole city looking over their shoulders and Abdals patrolling the streets every night, this sounds like a suicide mission.
Ahmed rubbed his eyes.
And we're going to need the others here if we're planning one of those.
Chapter 44. It was dawn before we had a plan that wouldn't end with us all dying by Abdal fire. We started looking for the most likely place to intercept the transport taking Rahim out of the city. We needed to get to it before it left Isman. Fighting in the confined space of the city streets was to our advantage. If it got out into open ground, we didn't stand a chance. Sam stepped through the wall as we all stood craned over a map of Isman. There was an ugly bruise on his cheek that hadn't been there last time I saw him.
Where'd you get that?
Azad asked, distracted for a moment.
A friend?
Sam said cagily before joining us around the table. He shot me a meaningful glance.